The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today we're going to be discussing youth, mental health, and social media. Social media use among young people is nearly universal, and based on the Pew Research Center survey conducted in 2022, up to 95% of teenagers surveyed ages 13 to 17 reported using social media, and more than a third of them use it almost constantly. Both the U.S. Surgeon General and the American Psychological Association point to growing evidence that social media is causing harm to our young people's mental health. And we have a very special guest with us who works directly with youth and in this field, who can help us understand how to help keep our teens healthy and safe in the social media space and in the world. And he is Dr. Jan Ponson. He's Medical Director of Youth Services, Vice Chair of for Clinical Affairs, and Assistant Professor at the Yale University Child Study Center. The center, part of the Yale School of Medicine, conducts research and provides clinical care to children and families, including in-home and outpatient care. Welcome, Dr. Ponson.
Hello, nice to be here, Vincent.
It's great to have you here. So, Dr. Ponson, before we delve into the topic at hand, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you became interested in this field and in the research and clinical care work that takes place at the Yale Child Center.
So this could go back far in time, but I've always had an interest in philosophy, psychology, and my parents were both school teachers. And we traveled quite a bit back and forth to our family of origin in France. And from that perspective, I experienced different cultures, perceiving the world in slightly different ways. And from there, my interest burgeoned, went to medical school and into psychiatry. And after having three young kids, decided that I would give child psychiatry a test run out of interest in the field and figuring worst case scenario, I learned something to help myself and my family. So, and then I ended up at through residency and fellowship at the Yale Child Study Center, where I've been for the last 20 years.
Wow. So, doctor, we know that teen mental health, youth mental health is a very hot topic these days. So from your experience and perspective, what are the core mental health challenges that our teens are experiencing, and how can you differentiate them from the ones that have always been part of growing up as a teen and ones that are more, say, closely associated with the times and the particular challenges of our times today?
There are several threads and several ways of thinking about this. Our teens are certainly experiencing a greater degree of challenges and severity in their mental health reporting. So, for example, in our emergency department, kids are showing up having attempted more frequently than pondering an attempt, although we've always had kids attempting suicide. So that's a particular thing. I think the other element to the mental health crisis is a greater awareness. So when you're more aware of mental health questions and issues, people pay more attention, and there's a greater volume from that. Then you have the challenges that we're going to get into today, living life in the modern era with technology and the demands of the modern era beyond technology. And I would say that a final piece is how we conceptualize day-to-day stress, and whether we can conceptualize day-to-day stress as normal part of development and human development, or whether we can conceptualize it as a disorder, a manifestation of a disorder. So I know that's a lot to think through there, but those are some of the aspects to what we're seeing today.
You know, I'm a dad of a teenage daughter, and you're a father as well. And I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with my peers about all of the challenges facing our young people, from bullying to drug use to school shootings, climate change, and more. You know, it sometimes makes us wonder how our teens can even withstand that type of pressure and come out of it unscathed without, mental health challenges. What, without going in too much detail, what general advice would you have for parents who are trying to help their kids stay healthy and resilient in terms of all what they face?
There's a good amount of data. Many of your listeners may have heard of the Adverse Childhood Event Study, which shows that negative childhood events, parents fighting, drug use, divorce, especially acrimonious divorce, can affect kids negatively. Positive child experiences, however, mitigate those quite a bit. So providing your child positive experiences. Does your child have an adult available you to approach about their thoughts and feelings reasonably well? Do they have other adults outside of the family with whom that they can be connected? Are they socially connected with others? So there's certain things that are protective factors. In terms of practical things that the parents can do is really to try to normalize for them and have conversations that the world is indeed challenging and tough, but it's always been challenging and tough. And we are, as people, able to work together and solve problems. So I think injecting hope and not catastrophizing and magnifying anxiety is a big part of a stance to take with as a parent.
You know, I produce a climate change awareness program with Scenic Hudson, which is a nationally renowned environmental organization. And we always talk about, you know, we really strive to not sugarcoat climate change, to provide real facts as to really what's happening, but also to help people understand that it's not too late, that if we work together, if we come together. So there's kind of an analogy there of what you just mentioned, which is that, you know, you don't want to hide the reality of the world from your children, you know, age appropriately, but you also want to instill the fact that, you know, that challenges can be addressed and perhaps even overcome if we work together in a positive way. And we know that also pro-social involvement really helps, right? So all the things that kids do instead of drugs or instead of, you know, the negative things that can happen, like sports, music, theater, art, you know, pets, you know, friend groups, what have you. So that's really good advice. So let's get into social media then, which is really the topic of this conversation. And, you know, my daughter has always had a very strong and connected friend group, which is pretty much sustained by a combination of in-person and online activity, namely social media. It seems to be like enhances social connectivity. So, what are your thoughts about that? Do you think that social media has a positive role to play in that regard in enhancing social connectivity?
Vincent, I think it's a great way to begin because we don't want to denigrate social media completely. We're going to talk about some of its more negative effects, but social media certainly has its positive elements. And the key one that you mentioned is online social connection. I think folks from disadvantaged groups, highly marginalized groups, are able to communicate and discover information about folks like them. So I think those are some of the positives. And whether it's social media or just technical communication, reaching out to others that we've known from our distant path or family members. So yes, I do think there's positives.
You know, we'll get into the negatives after we take a short break in a bit. So it is positive, but it's not an open-ended that says, you know, it's a good thing, so just keep on doing more and more and more of it, right? There are some guardrails there, right? Responsible guardrails.
Well, I think that as the Surgeon General that you mentioned, Dr. Murthy's advisory, what he describes after putting out a report with a review of the evidence, that there certainly social media raises a great deal of concerns. And I would say the key ones are the amount of time that the teens are exposed to social media on social media, which is probably, I think, the current average is, I think, 7 hours a day, if I recall from the latest figures, and how it impacts their health, which includes activity, sleep. Sleep is a big one, especially teenagers who are up later and later with their phones and then don't have the 6, 8 to 9 hours that they need for sleep, which then will affect their mood, their ability to concentrate, the next day. And then there's also the issue of what they're exposed to in terms of content. All of those are factors that are concerns.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've always thought that, you know, and it's anecdotal, but I've always thought that, you know, because we are hardwired as human beings to be social animals, that social connectivity is really essential to our well-being, and that if we're not getting it in person because of breakdown in community, that we have to get it somehow, and that social media kind of, the popularity of social media somewhat fills that void. But that's a whole other big question. So I'd like to discuss in depth a little bit about some of the negative aspects of social media and then some of the recommendations that you have. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything. Helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Every moment counts if you're at risk or living with lung cancer. And anyone with lungs can get lung cancer. It causes more cancer deaths than breast, colon, and prostate combined. It can feel like a race against time. And while there may be moments where you question your next step, it's essential to know that you don't have to confront lung cancer alone. Through it all, GoTo for Lung Cancer is here for you. From screening, treatment, and survivorship support, to finding the right care close to home, we are your community. As your friends, your guides, your teachers, your advocates, and your support system, GoTo is your go-to. Confronting lung cancer starts here. Visit goto.org today.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking about youth mental health and social media with Dr. Jan Ponson, who's a medical director of youth services, vice chair for clinical affairs, and assistant professor at the Yale University Child Study Center. Dr. Ponson, before the break, we were talking about, some of the positive impacts of social media with respect to enhancing social connectivity and providing those threads of communication for our young people. Let's talk a little bit about what was mentioned in the opening by the U.S. Surgeon General and the American Psychological Association about the harm caused by social media for young people. Can you talk about that a bit?
I think other than the physical, we could call physical harms that have social emotional effects, are the amount of time that kids spend, so affecting sleep and also affecting attention in school the next day from lack of sleep and fatigue. Those are big ones. The other most detrimental aspect of social media is the social comparison. So you have others on social media, and as you are moving away from your parents, highly social in this age range, and you're moving towards peers, how you fit in, where you fit in becomes all important, and devastating when negative things happen and uplifting and good things happen. And there's a constant sense of comparison. And no break from that sense of comparison if you are constantly on your phone looking for likes, looking for posting, looking for the responses of the likes, looking which friends liked you or not. So it drives an obsessional, that like button can drive an obsessional relationship with phones that is really not healthy. There's lots of evidence that leads to negative self-worth, self-talk around that piece in particular, the social comparison element.
And that's particularly at a time when young people are just trying to establish body image, establish identity. So, you know, one of the things I've always thought about too is like when you and I were growing up in school, you know, if something embarrassing happened to us, you know, it happened and then it was like forgotten about, you know, half an hour later, a small handful of people knew about it. But now if that happens either in or out of school, the whole school knows about it almost instantly. That has to be very difficult for young people to navigate that kind of pressure.
It's really, really difficult. It's unrelenting. You can't escape it. Kids will create fake Instagram accounts of another kid as a bullying tactic, the constant posting or frequent, you know, recreation of accounts then to fake accounts to then join in the bullying, the online bullying. I think that it also gets the community involved. So parents of kids that are bullied via social media may have their parents then defending their child with the other kids' parents online. So sometimes it extends past the kids, and then beyond that, school administration may get involved. So it not only is it can feel incessant, but it also can enroll the larger community for certain events and certain incidences.
And now you have the onset of deep fake porn and all of that other other horrible stuff that's out there. So yeah, and you know, kids are not necessarily well equipped to, you know, to withstand that. I mean, we kind of take it with a grain of salt from our, you know, years of life experience, but it could be really potentially devastating. So can you talk about for a moment about that? I know that the adolescent, you know, brain isn't fully developed until 25, but there's that range between 10 and 19, that formative stage in the brain when in the developing brain when a lot of things are happening. Can you talk about what those things are and how social media can fit, you know, can impact that?
I think there are several threads here. One to focus on, among others, is we talked about the social comparison and its detriment there. Another one is that the notion of cognitive patience. Kids are not availing themselves of opportunities to develop cognitive patience, meaning that you are with something, it's a little boring. You have to be patient. You have to struggle with it and stay with it. When we were younger, it was either bored, decide to read, decide to build Legos, use your creativity, come up with something creative, go outside and play. Now it's, I'm bored. I can reach to my computer. I can reach to YouTube, Netflix, my tablet, my phone. And so a big piece is kids not tolerating the stress and needing things in a much more quick paced way. So that affects their ability to really stay with material in the classroom, for example, or to tolerate other matters that require some delayed gratification.
And even maybe a little bit of reflection, right? To kind of process through some of the difficult times, right? Kind of like almost like outrunning their problems by just filling their time up with endless distraction and not really confronting, you know, in a healthy way, what might be going on for them.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so can you, provide parents and with some practical steps with respect to if their kids are, you know, just young and then maybe, you know, will be engaging in social media or already have, what can you advise parents to do?
I think it's important to give advice with the context of a nurturing and loving spirit. And by that, I mean, giving parent advice can also be giving parent guilt, inducing guilt, because it's very difficult to live up with ideal recommendations. And that's what they can feel like. They can feel like ideal. One thing that we haven't talked about is a parent's use of the social media and the impact on the relationship with the child and how your child experiences your attention and availability when you're on your phone instead of available for them. And that actually is particularly important at the youngest ages. So infant, toddler, there's this notion of joint attention. Your joint attention with your child and your responses to their needs in the moment allows the child to experience their need. I'm angry. My parent is responding to me. I see the look on their face. And internally, you have a sense of your parent is there for you and they help you understand your emotions and responses to your emotions. So that is really important with the younger years, which is why not only for the child to get off instruments, electronic instruments at a very young age, because they too need to be in the world touching concrete objects and not in the electronic world, but parents should also be staying away from these instruments in the first few years. I would say in terms of other recommendations that hold off as long as you can in terms of electronic devices. I think they're part of the reality. But if you are not holding off as long as you can, you want to create real structures around time of use. Homework is done before electronics are used. Or if a child has the ability, use electronics, but then get to homework, but have some clear parameters. Try to make activity, creativity a part of the routine. So it's not just electronics as a sole form of activity. It's important to keep electronics, TVs out of the bedroom. Plenty of data that shows when kids don't have electronics in the bedroom or TV in the bedroom, they get better sleep, they do better with their homework, so keeping things out of the bedroom. And then there are other recommendations that I think do require more societal intervention to take care of parents. Well, some of the recommendations I gave were, when your kids are younger, you should try to minimize electronic use, do it reasonably, and you have pretty complete control over that. But as they get older, they're going to want the devices that their friends have. They're going to say they're excluded and feel excluded if they don't have the same devices their friends have and talking about the same material. And that's where it becomes more challenging. And that's where it's more a burden on society to make regulatory changes. Right? The original regulations were about social media were going to be 16 years of age rather than the 13 years of age that it is now. And there's no teeth in the current regulations. There's no ability to sue the social media companies, for example, although there's some attorney generals are moving towards them. And so there's no teeth to the regulation. But if we could have clear regulation up the age, then it's no longer a parent trying to fight the rest of the world about setting appropriate limits for their child. So from there, but aside from where we go, another one would be school districts really should start to think about taking phones out of the school. But there's usually a very strong minority of parents who would object to that. They want to be in touch with their kid. They feel they should be allowed to be in touch whenever their kid is in school. They worry about a terrible event happening and not being in touch with their kid. But nonetheless, the long-term benefit of not having phones in the school system as a rule rather than a recommendation would be helpful to parents. That all said, you want to delay free access smartphone as long as you can. And depending on who you are and your child, I would try to delay as much as possible.
Thank you, Dr. Ponson. And finally, before we run out of time, where can listeners go to learn more about your work, the work of the Yale School of Medicine's Child Study Center?
So the easiest thing to do is simply to Google Yale Child Study Center or Yale Child Study Center, Jan Ponson, or just Jan Ponson, and you'll find us.
Thank you so much. And for folks out there, there is a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children cyber tip line, and that's for all kinds of potential harm that could come to young people online, and that is 1-800-843-5678. And Dr. Ponson, thank you so much for being here and for the work that you do and your colleagues do in helping to keep our kids safe. We really appreciate and value that work.
Thank you for your time. Really appreciate being here.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and safe. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.